Before we get into today's show, I wanted to send love and prayers to the family and friends of Ed Asner. Ed Asner was one of the most versatile actors of our time. He has passed away peacefully at the age of 91 on August 29th, 2021. Please pray for his loved ones at this time. Have you felt the world has lost its mind? That people don't have common sense anymore? Don't fear! This Common Sensocrat is here and you're not alone. You may agree, disagree, or just want to listen. If you're always up for a good time with some humor and some real talk, then you are in the right place. I am going to update you all with the latest news in politics, culture, lifestyle, fashion, so much more. I am your host, Carrington Rowe, so gear up for the harshest truth. Not the sweetest lie. Let's go. Welcome to Newsday Tuesday, my Common Sensocrats. In today's episode, we are going to get into a lot. I'm going to start with entertainment news today involving Kristen Stewart playing the late Princess Diana in the movie Spencer, and some news regarding Anna Wintour and Bill Nye. No, not the science guy, the actor. And then we get into the news that may have skipped your newsfeed, especially with all of the Afghanistan and hurricane news going on. Then I do my education lightning round since I won't have a Thursday episode this week, and then good news to wrap it all up. So let's get started with some entertainment, shall we? Let's get into the movie Spencer, starring Kristen Stewart playing the late Princess Diana. And before I get into all of this, I looked at my laptop and I saw that it was August 31st. And I went, oh my gosh, it's August 31st. This is the 24 year anniversary of Princess Diana's death. And I blanked. I can't believe this. Wow, it's been 24 years. And that was very tragic what happened to her. She passed away in a car accident in Paris. It's just tragic. If you would like to look it up on your own time, you can. But it was tragic. I was only 6 years old when it happened. But still, my mom has been a big follower of the royal family for years, and yeah. So I think that's why I have a connection to that, is through my mom. Pretty much. So of course I've been following them as well. And yeah, I can't imagine how Prince William and Harry are feeling today, especially today. But the thing about, before I move on about Kristen Stewart here, Princess Diana was the world's princess. Everything she touched turned to beauty. It turned to diamonds. It turned to gold. It turned to just whatever light you needed in your dark place. And I know that sounds really cheesy to say it that way, but it's the truth. Just from the videos I've looked at about her, and the pictures I've seen of her, and just looking up the past documentaries I've watched about her, her interview with Bashir. I mean, just everything. She was so full of everything. I mean, just full of life, really, because she's been through a lot of hardships in her life, and she had been through a lot of good times as well. But she got thrown into the royal family at a very young age. So like, even she wasn't even 20 yet. I think it was 20. She didn't even turn 20 when she married Prince Charles. So I understand, not to that extent, but being that young, I didn't think about marrying a prince. I was busy living my life, you know, going to school, and like she was doing. She was going to school, and then Prince Charles and her got married. They got married, and she was thrown into this royal life, and she probably thought she could handle it. She loved him and went through some ups and downs with that. A lot of downs, unfortunately. But I think it's But yeah, I think it's important to still talk about her because she was a very important figure in our lifetime. And so definitely today, please remember her if you want to look up pictures, look up videos, look up if you have some time. Just please do whenever. It doesn't have to be today, obviously, but just whenever. So I'm definitely going to send my love and prayers to especially Prince William and Prince Harry at this time, and all of the rest of Diana's family. Yeah, because I'm sure they're having their day of mourning today. So definitely send love and prayers to them. But today also I'm going to talk about Kristen Stewart playing Princess Diana. And this is my opinion. I don't like this at all. I do not like it. The Spencer teaser trailer dropped. And you'll hear over here because I think it premiered in Venice from what I'm reading. Either it premiered or the trailer premiered in Venice. And Pablo Larraín, who did he's done some movies. He did he also he's the one that directed Natalie Portman in the movie Jackie, playing Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. So he's that. But that made sense for Natalie Portman, because she, when you watch that movie, she looks, I mean, they made her look just like Jackie Kennedy, like dead on. I mean, she looked magnificent. I mean, she's perfect. Even the accent and everything, she got it down. Kristen Stewart, however, I'll give her credit for the accent. I'll give her credit for that, because you could tell she worked very hard on the accent. But everything else, the hair, yes. The costumes, yes. But but Kristen Stewart herself playing Princess Diana. One, the first thing, this is just also from a creative mindset and a actor mindset here. I was watching the teaser trailer, and she's too short for the role. Princess Diana was, I believe, 5'10 or 5'11. Very tall woman. Kristen Stewart is, and I'm 5'5. Kristen Stewart's my height with heels on. She tiny. Like she did it, it's I don't know. I guess I'll have to watch the movie when it hits the streaming, but I'm not gonna go see it in theaters. I refuse. But it goes through, so here's basically what it goes through. It's only set in December of 1991, the Prince and Princess of Wales marriage, and that was at the time where it was in the prime, talked about the affairs and the divorce and basically about all about the Christmas festivities at their estate. And of course, there's of course the eating and drinking and shooting and hunting and so, the usual that they do at Christmas time. But it basically is only talking about in the movie, it's only 3 days of her life, which in a way, I get what he's doing. I get what he's doing. It's from what he said at the Venice Film Festival, and then I'll, move along here, but it says, quote, it's only 3 days of her life, and in that very small amount of time, you're able to get into a wider, bigger perspective of who she was. We all know her fate, what happened to her, and we don't need to go there. We'll stay in this more intimate space where she could express where she wants to go and who she wants to be, end quote. So I get what he's doing, and I guess for this section of her, for this moment of her life, fine. But I still don't like the fact that Kristen Stewart plays her in the movie. So, and a lot of people do not. I've talked to many people about this, and they don't. And people are actually upset because they're like, okay, if you play, you have to, with Princess Diana, she was one of the most iconic British royals in history. So everybody's like, why is Kristen Stewart of all people playing her? So people are not very happy about this. But yeah, we shall see what happens. I think it comes out at the end of this year, I believe. Let's see. Let me scroll down. Yeah, later this year. So it doesn't have the date, but the teaser is out. So it is on YouTube. It's everywhere. So look it up, check it out, and we shall see what happens. I just caught myself. The him I'm referring to is Pablo Larraín, the director of the film. So we shall see what he does with this film. And of course, like I said, I will be seeing it streaming, not in theaters. So I guess it's official. Bill Nye, not the science guy, the actor, and Anna Wintour are dating because pictures became public of them having a romantic dinner in Rome. Yeah, there are pictures all over the place, especially on the Daily Mail, if you want to look it up. Everywhere, it's showing him caressing her shoulder. They're looking at each other longingly. He gave her red roses. Yeah, I don't think just an average nice guy just gives a girl roses because they're just saying, hey. If you're giving a woman red roses, you're being romantic and you're interested. So, at least the old school way you do so. But they both are 71, so I'm glad to see there's still a little romance in people. But yeah, I'm like, hey, guess that confirms it. They're going out. So good for them. I hope they're happy because Anna is, getting a divorce from her husband of 16 years. So I hope they're happy and congratulations. Now let's get to the real news, shall we? So the Supreme Court blocks CDC's eviction moratorium with 6-3 vote. I mean, this should have been a 9-0, but I'm happy with this. So the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday ruled 6-3 against the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's eviction moratorium. The newest moratorium was set to last through October 3rd. So hooray! The CDC does not have control. The CDC at all, they do not have control. They are the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They're the Center for Disease. They're not the Center for Rent Control. That's not their job. Their job is to help with health. That's their job. I'm glad they voted on this. They voted 6-3. I'm glad it's done. But what they're basically saying, though, is it's up to Congress to authorize it, not the CDC. That's their ruling, which, yeah. But it'd be nice if the Supreme Court just said that there should never, ever be such a thing as a federally imposed eviction moratorium. But again, whatever. We'll take this because the Supreme Court is actually doing something right here. Yeah, so basically they're going over what they have authority over, what they don't have authority over. I mean, a lot of these arguments, they should have been said almost 2 years ago. But again, I'm not inside the Supreme Court, so I don't know if they actually have cases up to the top of the ceiling, because they probably do. But I'm glad they finally came around to this one. But here's the scariest part. So the three justices that dissented the opinion. This is what they said in a document in a statement here. It says, quote, first, it is far from demonstrably clear that the CDC lacks the power to issue its modified moratorium order. Second, and this one is actually very scary, by the way, it says, quote, second, the balance of equities strongly favors leaving the stay in place. Yeah, let me read that line again. The balance of equities strongly favors leaving the stay in place. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to continue here. Applicants, is the rest of the quote. Applicants say they have lost thousands of dollars in rental income, but compare that injury to the irreparable harm from vacating the stay. COVID-19 transmission rates have spiked in recent weeks, reaching levels that the CDC puts as high as last winter, 150,000 new cases per day. Third, the public interest is not favored by the spread of disease or a court's second guessing of CDC's judgment. The public interest strongly favors respecting the CDC's judgment at this moment. End quote. Well, thank God the majority of the court does not agree with that last sentence. Well, as far as I know, but they might, I don't know, but according to this vote, they don't. So, but that second paragraph right there, when they say, again, repeat it one more time, quote, the balance of equities strongly favors leaving the stay in place. So what those three people, and that is Breyer, Kagan, and Sotomayor, those are the three, okay? They're basically saying that balance of equities is more important than the actual law. And they're Supreme Court justices, and they're saying this. That should terrify the F out of everybody right there. But I'm happy because we got the vote. However, it doesn't matter. The fact that those three are sitting Supreme Court justices and they're saying that, I'm a little terrified of that. So, but at the end of the day, it took them long enough, but they did block CDC's power, which is great. So, hooray. Let's go back to May of 2020. The Associated Press reported that disgraced former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo had sent at least 4,300 COVID-positive patients into nursing homes. A few months later, this number was revised to at least 6,300 patients. Most of the media was silent. They were promoting Cuomo's new book about his amazing leadership skills. Remember that? It was only a year later when a U.S. District Attorney's office said they were investigating Cuomo, and the New York Attorney General said the same, that most of the nation learned that the guy was hiding deaths and that the number was now closer to 9,000. Well, now that the governor has retired over his sexual harassment scandal, the new New York governor, Kathy Hochul, officially added 12,000 deaths to the COVID death tally that Cuomo's office refused to acknowledge. Yeah. Says in the article here, it says, delivering another blow to what's left of former Governor Andrew Cuomo's legacy, New York's new governor acknowledged on her first day in office that the state has had nearly 12,000 more deaths from COVID-19 than Cuomo told the public. Quote, the public deserves a clear, honest picture of what's happening. And that's whether it's good or bad. They need to know the truth. And that's how we restore confidence. Governor Kathy Hochul said on NPR, in its first daily report, or its first daily update on the outbreak Tuesday evening, Hochul's office reported that nearly 55,400 people have died of the coronavirus in New York based on death certificate data submitted to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That's up from about 43,400 that Cuomo reported to the public as of Monday, his last day in office, this last Monday. Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but 20% not being reported of all the deaths here. Yeah, that's a pretty big deal, actually. I don't know about you guys, but that's just me. Now, not all of these were officially nursing home residents. The added deaths included those who died at home, in hospice, in prisons, in state-run facilities for the disabled, and people who had died before they could get a lab-confirmed COVID test, if I can talk. Of course, Governor Kathy Hochul was lieutenant governor under Cuomo. So why now? Why are you saying this now when you've technically seen, it seems like you've technically known about this for months. So why now? So, yeah, why now? That's my question. So that also makes me very suspect of her with that, which anyone working under the Cuomo administration, especially during all of this, I'm pretty suspect of everybody. So they knew what was going on. So that tells me Kathy just wanted to expose Andrew Cuomo again. And I heard a little rumor that he's actually thinking of revenge. So we'll see if he actually has the balls to pull it off. But I think he should stay hidden for a while. What do you think? I think he should stay hidden for a while, especially the fact that he abandoned his dog at the mansion. So it might be best for Governor Cuomo to stay in hiding for a while. Yeah. Quiet rooms are a thing at the US Open now. So it says players at the US Open will have access to licensed mental health providers and quiet rooms as part of an initiative. And that was announced last Tuesday. So, of course, the US Open's happening right now. And it says here on tennis.com, it says for 2021, the US Open's already comprehensive medical care system will evolve to include a number of new initiatives aimed at providing best-in-class mental health support to players. The USTA's mental health initiative will ensure that a holistic approach is taken with all aspects of players' health, including mental health. The medical services program for the 2021 tournament will include licensed mental health providers giving players access to mental health services throughout the duration of the event. In addition, quiet rooms and other support services will be provided. The US Open will work closely and collaboratively with the WTA and ATP sports science and medicine staff on site in an effort to ensure players understand the enhanced medical services available and how to access these health offerings as needed. Now, look, being open about mental health is a really good thing. It should never be swept under the rug. But the more we overemphasize and fixate on mental health, it can lead to a rapid wildfire with the topic. Because mental health, yes, you need. That's why I always do my check yourself segments, because I don't mean that to make fun of you. What I mean by that is, are you listening to yourself? Are you listening to what you're actually saying? I don't think so, because with this is why we have people doing the whole, people being grown men and women being triggered by classic literature terms, or now we have professional sports organizations having quiet rooms for major athletes, when before y'all seemed fine before all of this. So what is really going on here? Because as good as it is to have mental health issues out in the open, you can overdo it. And also, do you even believe you actually have mental health issues? That's the real problem. It's like, do we it's like do when do we when do we kind of go, well, is this just for attention? Or are you really having a mental health issue right now? Because that needs to be checked if you actually are. Like, I think we, the public, care more about your health than the actual tennis, than the actual ten, than the actual US Open. I feel like we, as out here in the real world, out here, actually probably, actually, we don't probably, we actually care about your mental health more than the actual USTA does. They may say they do, but at the end of the day, they're just trying to be woke in a more subtle way. And that's just my opinion with all of this. So it's a shame that this is happening at the US Open. I used to work at the US Open. I had a great time at the US Open with a lot of my friends and everybody. And it's just a shame to see that this is kind of being, in a way, forced on the players. And that's a shame because it seems like you didn't really need it before. Until certain big athletes started saying they had mental health problems. So I'm just saying, not making fun of it. It's interesting that all of a sudden now you're caring about the mental health. All of a sudden. Just saying. The ACLU is suing to force South Carolina to adopt a mask mandate. Yeah, you heard that correctly. So the ACLU, which is the American Civil Liberties Union, they posted to their Twitter page on August 24th this: breaking, we're suing to end South Carolina's ban on mask requirements in schools with Disability Rights South Carolina, ABLE South Carolina, and parents. Students with disabilities are effectively being excluded from public schools because of this ban. Courts must intervene. All right, let me tell you something with this ban on mandates. What South Carolina is saying is schools cannot mandate masks, but students can still wear them as much as they want. But according to ACLU, it's a quote-unquote disability rights issue. No, ACLU, there's a ban on mandates, not masks. How are children being excluded here? I thought the whole point was to wear a mask if they want to. Whatever they're choosing. That's the whole point of freedom of choice. But clearly they don't remember what that's like anymore. With what ACLU is suggesting here, the thing with the masks is forcing the masks on every student. This is the thing they don't think about. Or maybe they are, and there's more sick than I thought, because here's the thing they don't realize. If you force masks on every student, you're also excluding students with disabilities because of their disabilities, they cannot wear a mask. So if you force the masks on the kids, then the students with disabilities can't come to school because they can't wear a mask. Like ACLU, y'all are morons. I mean, it's crazy. Look, it's a very difficult situation no matter how you look at it. But the fact is, this is the biggest issue of all. It's the fact that the ACLU is going on the side of forced compliance to a medical intervention here. And that shows you how far the group is away from their original message, or their original purpose, I should say. And they have not been that way for the last few years. They might as well, they haven't been a civil liberties union about a few years or so. I mean, it's been a while since they actually have gone back to what they originally stood for. So they might as well at this point be called the American Union. Just remove the civil liberties out of your term. Or better yet, just stop being a group altogether because you're done. You've been done for a while. You get all your money and that's great, but at the end of the day, you need to stop being a union. Just stop being a group because you've wrecked what it originally stood for. So good job, guys. Good job. You know how I talked about in yesterday's episode about Biden's dog, comparing him to Cujo? Well, Judicial Watch has released some information about the happenings with the dog. So it says President Joe Biden's dog Major has had a few well-known and well-publicized biting incidents since moving into the White House, but apparently he's taken more chomps than anyone thought, and the White House sort of kept it hidden, let's say. So this is what it says in the actual article here. It says the Biden family dog was a bit more of a problem pooch than the White House initially acknowledged, according to the Secret Service emails obtained by the conservative legal group Judicial Watch. The White House said at the end of March that Major, the Biden's 3-year-old German Shepherd, was involved in a pair of nipping incidents, but the emails show he was involved in several more. It says, quote, "At the current rate, an agent or officer has been bitten every day this week, March 1st to March 8th, causing damage to a tire or bruising and punctures to the skin." And that was what one of the emails said. Yeah, every single day, according to the emails. So when asked about the Biden administration's failing to disclose to the public the totality of Major's bites, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki got a little nippy herself. Take a listen to this.
Yesterday, the conservative transparency group Judicial Watch released Secret Service records on dog bites involving the first dog, Nature. One email said that Secret Service agents were bitten every single day for 8 days from March 1st to March 8th, and that the White House visitor was as well. At a March 9th briefing, you only described one biting incident to us and described the dogs as being herded, whisked back to Delaware on a pre-planned trip to visit family friends. Obviously, that is not the world's most important story, but it is significant because we expect honest information even for minor stories. So can you explain to us why there was some kind of misleading account presented to us? And if we can't get honest information about minor stories, why should we have faith in the administration's account for larger issues like Afghanistan?
I know you do keep the dog in the news in the briefing room, so thank you for that. As we've stated previously, Major has had some challenges adjusting to life in the White House. He has been receiving additional training, as well as spending some time in Delaware, where the environment is more familiar to him and he is more comfortable. I don't have any additional specifics, but I think that speaks to where Major is located, to be fully transparent in your ongoing interest in the dog. Go ahead.
Yeah, the fact that he asked that specifically, the quote, "If we can't get honest information about minor stories, why should we have faith in the administration's account for larger issues like Afghanistan?" And the fact that she reacted that way, I mean, she's very snarky when she gets defensive. Have y'all noticed that? She gets quite defensive. Basically, what she's saying is, well, we tried to make it work, but he just couldn't function very well, so we shipped him back to Delaware. That's just what she might as well have said. Just flat out. So, if that's how the administration treats its problems, which, I mean, evidently, look at what's happening in the world with this whole administration right now. Yeah, Biden, if he's actually paying attention, which I doubt it. But whoever controls him is whoever does. And yeah, the administration is sweating a bit. Also, where's Kamala? Now I can never watch Cujo the same because all I'll be thinking about is that's Major. That is Major, the dog. Interesting. Hey, Common Sensocrats. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on Spotify, Google, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. I am also updating videos for my YouTube and Rumble channel, but definitely subscribe to those anyway. So hit that button that looks like a bell so you can immediately get notified when those videos are released. Like and follow on all of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Getter. Instagram, TikTok, Telegram, and of course, follow me on commonsensocrats.locals.com. If you have any suggestions on topics that you want me to cover and or have any questions, don't hesitate to email common.sensocrat@gmail.com. And now, back to the show. I'm sure you've heard all about this teacher. So this teacher on TikTok talked about how she took her classroom's American flag down and now the kids pledge allegiance to the pride flag. Yeah, just take, this is Miss Pitson. She teaches English at Back Bay High School in Southern California. And apparently Miss Pitson finds the American flag uncomfortable, so she took it down. So listen to this clip.
Okay, so during flag period, we have announcements and they do the Pledge of Allegiance. I always tell my class, stand if you feel like it, don't stand if you feel like it, say the words if you want, don't have to say the words. So my class decided to stand but not say the words. Totally fine. Except for the fact that my room does not have a flag. It used to be there, but I took it down during COVID because it made me uncomfortable. And I packed it away and I don't know where, and I haven't found it yet. But my kid today goes, hey, it's kind of weird that we just stand and then, you know, we say it to nothing. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, I gotta find it. Like, I'm working on it. I got you. In the meantime, I tell this kid, we do have a flag in the class that you can pledge your allegiance to. And he, like, looks around and goes, oh, that one?
Everything about that video upsets me to the very core. By the way, these are high school kids, and the fact that he said, where's the flag? Yeah. Good for that kid for asking. Like, where's the flag? And no, they absolutely should stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. You freaking idiot. Oh, by the way, she got fired, just so you all know, because the students showed the parents showed the principal went, what the hell? And, yeah, she was on leave, but then got fired because, The most epic thing happened actually after that, after all of that. So when after she, before she got fired, I should say, the parents, a lot of parents got together and put American flags right in front of the high school. Like a bunch of American flags. And I thought it was the most epic thing ever. So good for the parents and bye-bye. Bye-bye, you ignorant person. Why don't you go to Afghanistan? Maybe, you know, see what happens to you over there when you wave around the pride flag. I dare you, actually. And yeah, it's just, it's sad. And when she, and by the way, there's another TikTok. By the way, she did delete her TikTok, so you can only find it on the internet now because she deleted all of her accounts because, yeah, she made an idiot of herself. Absolutely did. And yeah, and she basically said in another TikTok video, I pledge allegiance to the queers. That's what she says in another clip as well. So, I mean, this is as un-American and demented as they get, for sure. And then, while we're on the topic of this, so I looked at this next thing here, which is related to the topic. It says, Pew Research poll shows 65% of Democrats think censorship of quote-unquote misinformation is good, even if it suppresses personal rights and the pursuit of truth. Yeah, very 1984, doesn't it? Just with that headline alone. And it's sad. I don't understand it. I just don't get it. It says here from the poll, it says in 2018, Republicans and Democrats opposed the idea of government mandated restrictions on speech at roughly the same rate. Only 37% of Republicans and 40% of Democrats wanted political authorities to intervene in online content. In 2021, the percentage of Democrats who want the government to regulate online speech increased to 65%, while just over one out of every four Republicans, or 28%, agreed. So already, it's a big jump. And then today, 70% of Republicans say those freedoms should be protected, even if it means some false information is published. Nearly as many Democrats, 65%, instead say the government should take steps to restrict false information, even if it means limiting freedom of information. And this gets even more insane. So nearly 80% of Democrats believe it's a good idea for big tech to regulate the truth. Yeah, but, you know, their thought process won't last for long once the tech overlords come after them. Because it's coming. It's coming. And then it finishes off in the article here. It says, a similar divergence took place when it came to the two parties' views on whether tech companies should bar the posting or sharing of views it deems quote-unquote misinformation. A majority of Democrats already backed companies like social media platforms quashing speech 3 years ago. But the percentage has risen to 76% by this year. Republicans were evenly split in 2018, but today only 37% think powerful online outlets should be able to crack down on disfavored viewpoints. Oh my God, this is a really good thing that the government and big tech. Oh my God, I can't. It's just. Because we have, this is the whole point I'm making with the last video I played for you with the TikToker teacher. Say that five times fast. Jesus. We have a huge percentage of Americans living in this nation who don't actually believe in the things that make America, America. Like they don't believe in the flag. They don't believe in any of this stuff, which is the point of what she's saying, the girl, the teacher that got fired. It makes her uncomfortable. Why does the flag make you uncomfortable, Miss Pitson? Why? Answer me truthfully on that. Until then, I'll book you a JetBlue flight out of here. I will book it for you right now, just so you can see what it's really like outside of the United States. Yeah, you'll be running to our country then, if you're able to get out, because it's crazy over there, evidently. Yeah, and I don't wish that on anyone, but if you're going to disrespect the flag like that, I'd be happy to book you a ticket right now. Any country you want, you pick it. But it has to be a third world country or beyond. Any one of them. Pick your poison. Because that's what you're going to get when you get there. Everything. Everything will be taken away from you in a split second. Yeah. Only in America, by the way, that you can say you hate the flag. Only in America you can. By the way. Yeah. But my listeners, you know that. So, anyway, it's very scary how closer and closer we are to 1984. Again, to refer to my episode on becoming Orwellian 1984, please, please listen to that if you have not yet, because I get into really important terms that are very relatable to today. More so than they should be. But unfortunately, here we are. So respect the flag, damn it. So this next story here is about a mother who gets stripped of parental rights because she is not vaccinated. Listen to this clip because this is absolutely devastating.
A Fox 32 exclusive tonight. A mother says that a Cook County judge has taken away her parental rights after learning that she's not vaccinated.
Dane Placco is live at Daily Plaza with this story, Dane.
Yeah, and what all parties agree is a very unusual, if not unprecedented, step. A Cook County judge here at the Daily Center has stripped a Chicago mom of her parenting time because she's refused to get the COVID vaccination shot.
I miss my son more than anything. It's been very difficult. I haven't seen him since August 10th.
August 10th, that's the day Rebecca Furlitt appeared in court via Zoom along with her ex-husband for a child support hearing involving their 11-year-old son. Now, the two share custody or had shared custody and parenting time 50-50. She says out of the blue, Cook County Judge James Shapiro asked her whether she'd been vaccinated. She told him no, she had not, because she's had bad reactions to vaccines in the past. Judge Shapiro then ordered that she be stripped of all parenting time with her son until she gets vaccinated. Over the past 2 weeks, she's been able to talk to him on the phone and via video call, but she has not seen her son in person. Furlitt is now appealing that order, saying the judge has no business taking away her parenting rights simply because she's not vaccinated.
I think it's wrong. It had nothing to do with what we were talking about, and he was placing his views on me and taking my son away from me.
In this case, you have a judge without any matter before him regarding the parenting time of the child deciding, oh, you're not vaccinated. You don't get to see your child until you are vaccinated. That kind of exceeds his jurisdiction.
Now, we talked to the attorney representing the father, Jeffrey Leving. You'll be hearing from him next hour. He says they were as surprised by this as anyone, but they support that decision by the judge, saying that given the pandemic, the child should be protected from an unvaccinated mother. We also reached out to the judge and the chief judge's office. They say they cannot comment on this case because it is ongoing. Live at the Daily Center, Dane Placco, Fox 32, Chicago.
Oh my God. That is absolute bullshit. That is, no. I can't. This is just. This is horrible. Really, I mean, this is worse than horrible. I mean, this is absolutely just this is going to be this is going to have huge yeah. This it's still developing. Of course, I'll keep y'all posted once I find out, or if you find out. Yeah, keep posted, you know. Keep up to date on this story the best you can, because this is what's happening all over the country. This guy had actually the most accurate metaphor about COVID-19 and an abusive husband. And just listen to how disturbing this is and how relatable is this, especially with the last story I just told you about.
Does this sound abusive to you? My friend's husband won't let her visit any friends or family. He has made her stop all contact with them, unless it's by phone or computer. He reads and censors her comments on social media. He makes her feel like she's going crazy for thinking that he's controlling, and that she's being ungrateful. After all, he's only doing this because of how much he cares for her. He doesn't want her going to the gym anymore, so she doesn't go. He doesn't want her to go to work anymore, so she doesn't go. He told her, you gotta rely on me for income. He doesn't let her go out anymore unless it's for necessities. And when she does, he makes sure that he has people in place to guilt trip her about it. He wants her to have a medical procedure done, and if she does it, she'll have more freedoms. And to top it all off, he's always telling her he's only doing this because he cares. Oh, wait. Did I say husband? I meant government. Here's the funny thing in society. You're all outraged if we do this to a spouse, but when the government does it, you're completely okay with it. Pull your head out of your ass.
Exactly. Pull your head out of your ass. He is so correct. That's scary how that compares very well to what is happening right now. And just remember, guys, if we stand together, the abusers cannot win. Welcome to this week's Education Lightning Round. Let's go. American University offers segregated classrooms, saying it's a safe space for Black students. American University, located in Washington, D.C., created a Black-only course section for a class on racism that freshmen at the university are required to take. The Black Affinity course is a single section for a class where students learn about, quote, race, social identity, and structures of power, end quote. Students will also, quote, evaluate how racism intersects with other systems of oppression, end quote. Iowa State professor, trigger warnings are needed now more than ever. Iowa State University Liberal Arts and Sciences professor, Michael Bujeha, encouraged the school to update its policies on trigger warnings because, quote unquote, times have changed. In an op-ed for the publication Inside Higher Ed, Bujeha argued that campus crimes alerts at Iowa State, which notify students of on-campus or nearby crime, might be triggering and deserve a trigger warning. Stanford professor says whiteness explained parents' opposition to school mask mandates. Stanford University political science professor Hakeem Jefferson posted a series of tweets claiming that whiteness is to blame for pushback on school mask mandates. Quote, make no mistake, this crazy opposition to mask wearing that is leading folks, read white people, to act violently at school board meetings and council meetings and everywhere else. Yeah. You can't disconnect it from whiteness, and discussions that don't acknowledge this are incomplete. Over 400 UNC instructors tried to delay on-campus classes. Over 400 faculty and staff at the University of North Carolina penned a petition calling on the university to delay the start date of in-person learning by at least 1 month. The petition came after the university announced that students who return to campus must either get vaccinated against the coronavirus or participate in weekly COVID-19 testing. Duke researcher who wrote a book about dishonesty accused of faking data in landmark study. Duke University psychologist researcher Dan Ariely is facing accusations that he used fake research in a landmark study about truth-telling. Ariely is best known for his New York Times best-selling book about dishonesty. A group of researchers at the blog Data Collada or Collada contested Ariely's conclusions, writing that they believe one of his primary experiments was faked. Stanford Law Students Publish Guide for Radical 1Ls. Students at Stanford Law School compiled a guide on anti-racist, anti-capitalist beliefs for incoming progressive radical students. The guide warns incoming freshmen that, quote, you may find yourself feeling outraged at the blatant racism, homophobia, xenophobia, etc., perpetuated by the law, end quote, and offered tips for working through the outrage. Philadelphia public school training bullies white teachers into admitting they're born racist. Philadelphia Public Schools Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion asked teachers to watch a video detailing the district's anti-racist mission and the 8 equity professional learning guiding principles. One of the principles, ownership, attempts to bully white teachers into admitting that they are racist by dint of their skin color. woman arrested at school board meeting after improperly wearing mask. A New York woman was arrested and detained after refusing to fully cover her nose while she was wearing her mask at a local school board meeting. Quote, "Yep, I was handcuffed and detained by Monroe County Sheriff tonight for inappropriately wearing my mask at the Fairport School District board meeting," end quote. And that was what the mother posted on social media. High school forced student athletes to wear taxpayer-funded ankle monitors to track COVID outbreaks. Eatonville High School, a public school in Washington State, allegedly forced student athletes to wear taxpayer-funded ankle monitors to help track coronavirus outbreaks or be barred from participating in sports. The school required student athletes to wear the ankle monitors for high contact and medium contact sports such as volleyball, football, basketball, wrestling, and soccer. And finally, new school's redesigned mascot is a gender-neutral, climate change-protesting social justice warrior. The new school, located in New York City, unveiled its updated gender-neutral mascot named Gnarls. The narwhal mascot has a backstory that aims to combat climate change. Gnarls had an, quote-unquote, unconventional upbringing due to, quote, distressing levels of ice loss, end quote, that forced its family out of Antarctica. And now to the good news. This first story here, I only have two today, but this is about a toddler versus the wild. So a one-year-old survives three nights lost in Russian forest. Yeah. This is pretty amazing. It was a search effort of 400 volunteers, police, and divers. They searched throughout the region for little, I think it's a Liuda, or Liuda, I think that's how you say her name. It was the fourth day of the search, and then some of the volunteers took a break around 2.5 miles from Liuda's home, and then that's where they heard something. Quote, "They heard a squeak that they found her in some branches under a tree." And that was what her mother said. So the volunteers investigated the sound and realized it actually came from Liuda. The volunteers found her and thought she was, quote, "weakened, bitten by insects," but she immediately stretched out her thin arms to cling tightly to her rescuers, according to the Moscow Times. So Liuda's quite adamant she'll never run away from mom again, the mother said. Although quite how long she'll remember that promise, I have no idea, but at least she says no, end quote. The Russians apparently have a knack for creating these super babies. Just saying. I mean, just reading that story. So this is actually not the first time a Russian baby survived the wilderness alone. So just 3 years ago, a three-year-old Russian child survived 3 days in the Siberian wilderness. All he had for survival was a chocolate bar, a shirt, and shoes, not even a coat. So I think these kids are going to be superheroes in the future. What do you think? I really believe that. This final story here is about a man sending an apology note and a $100 tip to a restaurant staff for his behavior. This is really cool. So it's a restaurant in York Beach, Maine, reportedly received a $100 tip and an apology letter from a customer who apparently rage quit because of the restaurant's slow service on the 4th of July weekend. It says, quote, "Can you please give this $100 along with my apology to the girl who is at the hostess station podium taking names to be seated for dinner on Monday, July 5th at around 5 to 6 p.m. I was very rude to her, which is out of character for me. I have way more respect for people than I showed that day. Pre-dinner cocktails before getting to the bluff may have contributed. No excuse. This is coming from a guy who tells people to be kind to service staff and tip big post-pandemic. How hypocritical. You never want to be that guy. And I was that guy. Sincerely sorry." And then to top it off, the note was signed, quote, "an embarrassed customer." And it says, quote, "it's very heartwarming. It's a very nice thing to do," said Timmy Sterk Ramsey, who works at the restaurant. It says, quote, "it's the first time that's happened and it was really touching. It made me feel good." So, yeah. Or I'm sorry, Tammy, not Tommy. Jeez, old Pace, I can't read anymore. Been looking at a screen too long, but that's right, Tammy. Yeah, Tammy, that's it. It really makes us happy too to see that this happens in our life right now, because we need some positive news these days. Yeah, it's outstanding. But yeah, it goes a long way to do it. I mean, gosh, in this age of cancel culture, this is actually wonderful to read about. So good for you, embarrassed customer. Good for you. Those are today's headlines. The saying for today is, pay attention to whom your energy increases and decreases around. That's the universe giving you a hint on who you should stray from or stay around. I will not have a Wednesday and Thursday episode this week, so look out for my next Fun Friday episode with Princess Chloe when we talk about episode 3 of The Prince. And thank you for your support of Princess Chloe. She is quite something. So you won't want to miss that one. Until next time, my common sensocrats, bye. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and rate 5 stars in the Apple Podcasts. I need to spread the word as much as possible about this podcast, and you all are such a big help for that. So thank you so much, and I look forward to you all to listen to the next episode.